From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump has unveiled his national security strategy in a major speech Monday.
Based on my direction, this document has been in development for over a year. It has the endorsement of my entire cabinet. Our new strategy is based on a principled realism, guided by our vital national interests and rooted in our timeless values.
Mr. Trump said his priorities include protecting the homeland, promoting American prosperity, preserving peace through strength, and advancing American influence.
We are once again investing in our defense, almost $700 billion, a record this coming year. We are demanding extraordinary strength, which will hopefully lead to long and extraordinary peace.
He pointed to Russia and China as competitors. Mr. Trump also vowed to deal with North Korea's nuclear threat.
This situation should have been taken care of long before I got into office, when it was much easier to handle. But it will be taken care of. We have no choice.
Mr. Trump also promised to challenge Pakistan on the harboring of terror groups and defeating extremism worldwide. He criticized the Iran nuclear deal and dropped climate change as a national security threat. South Africa's ruling ANC party elected Cyril Ramaphosa as its new leader. Nearly 5,000 members of the African National Congress voted at a conference in Johannesburg. Kaya Sithole spoke of the challenges Mr. Ramaphosa faces.
That's his immediate challenge. He's got 18 months until the general election, and this general election comes on the back of, you know, a lot of issues that are happening at government level.
The 65-year-old Ramaphosa, a former wealthy businessman and union leader, succeeds President Jacob Zuma. This is VOA News. The Trump administration wielded its first veto in the UN Security Council Monday, blocking a draft resolution that would have barred any change to the status of Jerusalem. The vote followed President Trump's December 6 decision to recognize the city as Israel's capital. The U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said there was no joy in casting the first veto in 6 years, but said it was necessary to defend U.S. sovereignty.
The fact that this veto is being done in defense of American sovereignty and in defense of America's role in the Middle East peace process is not a source of embarrassment for us. It should be an embarrassment to the remainder of the Security Council.
Israel's Prime Minister and the Israeli Ambassador Danny Dannon thanked the U.S. for its stand.
We thank the United States for staying loyal to the truth and vetoing this absurd resolution.
Palestinian envoy Riyad Mansour denounced the decision as provocative, reckless, and dangerous. He said the U.S. veto could not negate the legality of existing previous Security Council resolutions. Following last week's conclusion of the latest round of UN-sponsored Geneva peace talks, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad Monday told reporters that the multiple rounds over 3 years have produced nothing, and he blamed the opposition. Mr. Assad said a Russian-sponsored peace process in Sochi, which is to get underway in February, might offer a better result. France accused the government of delegation of obstructing progress in the UN peace process. The opposition has demanded that the Syrian leader not be part of any transition. The U.S. deplored what it called the regime's obstructionism and procrastination. Police sealed off central Vienna Monday to guard against protests as Austria became the only Western European country with a far-right government. Conservative People's Party leader Sebastian Kurz, at 31, has become the country's youngest chancellor in coalition with the Freedom Party. Rightist candidates scored gains in German national elections in September, and its French counterpart's presidential candidate made the runoff election in France in May. A Lebanese taxi driver with a criminal record has confessed to the killing of a British female employee at the British Embassy in Beirut. A preliminary investigation concluded that Rebecca Dykes was murdered in criminal act and was not political. Her body found near a highway outside Beirut Saturday. Protests erupted across the Central American nation of Honduras Monday, a day after the election tribunal ruled President Juan Orlando Hernandez won the contested November 26 election, despite charges of fraud. It was a narrow victory. The Organization of American States has called for a new election. The head of Zimbabwe's military appears set to become a vice president. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he is to fill two vice presidential posts, and Constantino Chiwenga, who engineered a military takeover last month, ending the 37-year-old rule of Robert Mugabe, is expected to retire. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Partey in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africa's ruling ANC party elects Cyril Ramaphosa as its leader.
One must see this as part of the ANC's election campaign for the general election. And what Ramaphosa offers in opposition to what his competitor would offer is that he's more appealing beyond the ANC.
Zualetu Jalobi is a political science professor at the University of Cape Town. We have a report on how Ramaphosa's election came about. Tensions escalate as the East African Legislative Assembly fails to elect its next speaker. And Uganda's parliament resumes debate to change presidential age limit.
The bill proposes to delete paragraph B, which bans persons below the age of 35 and above the age of 75 from standing as a candidate in a presidential election.
Jacob Obof-Obof is chairperson of the Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee. Angolans are given until early next year to repatriate money illegally taken from the country. And South Sudan authorities beef up security for Juba ahead of the holidays. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party has elected a new leader, Cyril Ramaphosa, who will likely be the party's presidential candidate in the next national election. But will Ramaphosa, who was not the outgoing president's pick, be able to overcome the massive challenges ahead for the party? VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The party's electoral commission announced the results Monday after a tense party conference in Soweto.
Comrade Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma received 2261 votes, and Comrade Cyril Ramaphosa received 2440 votes.
Ramaphosa, a successful businessman and current deputy president, has promised to bring business-friendly policies to South Africa. But that may not be what pushed him over the top in this tight and tense vote to lead the African National Congress Party. His opponent was Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, a former top diplomat and minister, who was also, for 16 years, the wife of the South African president, Jacob Zuma. Zuma is still president. His term as leader of the nation ends in 2019. But Zuma's popularity has sunk lower and lower as he dealt with one corruption scandal after another. Nearly 4,800 ANC delegates participated in the conference in Johannesburg, which was beset by massive delays as the deeply divided party argued behind closed doors about procedural issues. Earlier Monday, a grinning Zuma toured a collection of statues of South African liberation stalwarts, pausing to pay his respects at the bronze images of former President Nelson Mandela and former ANC President Oliver Tambo. He refused to answer journalist questions, but took a few minutes to address the crush of reporters.
I'm happy to say now, I'm bowing out, very happy, because I think from my own point of view, I made my contribution.
Many of Zuma's critics, including many high-profile party members, say his contribution to the ANC has been to destroy its image as a party of liberation and equal opportunity. Funde Sonwabo, a delegate from Gauteng province, said he had voted for Dlamini Zuma, but was happy to support the winner. He acknowledged that the ruling party, which he has belonged to, he said, since he was 20, has issues. The ANC has lost ground in recent elections, losing control of three major cities to the opposition.
I think we do have problems, and I'm glad that our leadership is admitting that we do have problems, but then we can't continue moaning and analyzing the problems. We've got to work out strategies of how to get out of the situation in which we are.
The party's outgoing treasurer, General Zwelin Mkhize, said party leadership is aware of calls for Zuma to step aside as president now that his term as party leader is over.
We took a discussion, that discussion in the past. When it arises, I think the ANC must deal with it at that point. At the moment, that issue hasn't arisen.
But with Ramaphosa's elevation to head of the powerful party, many ANC watchers predict that issue may arise again. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zualetu Jalobe is a political science professor at the University of Cape Town. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that Cyril Ramaphosa was elected as president of the African National Congress Party because he has a broad national appeal and is well-liked by the country's business community. He also says Ramaphosa will unify the ANC ahead of South Africa's 2019 presidential elections.
For the ANC, I think that it means that the party is able to unite behind a candidate who is more acceptable to all its alliance partners. And so therefore, you're more likely to have a less fractured ANC. A potential split in the ANC has been avoided. And that the ANC will go into the 2019 election as one organization, meaning we won't have the kind of dynamics we've had in the last few years where ANC elective conferences have always been accompanied by a break inside the party. In terms of what it means for the country as a whole, I think that one must see this as part of the ANC's election campaign for the general election. And what Ramaphosa offers in opposition to what his competitor would offer is that he's more appealing beyond the ANC.
Some have expressed concern about the inability of the ANC previously under Zuma to keep its promises regarding service delivery. What do you think South Africans would expect from the new president of the ANC, Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa?
I think that generally speaking, Ramaphosa as a politician is seen as somebody who would be able to mobilize the right amount of people and the right amount of resources in order to make things happen in a way that Mr. Zuma couldn't do. For example, if one takes service delivery, or if one takes any of the amount of issues that any government in this country is faced with, the problem with Mr. Zuma is that his authority was never strong beyond the governing party, which meant that even in the selection of the cabinet, in the local government, etc., he never had the kind of power that is required for you to make things happen outside of his own pond. Now you have a case whereby you've got a president who is able to have the kind of authority that can extend to the party. Now, whether or not that will happen is an open question. We don't know. What we know as Mr. Ramaphosa, as the vice president of the ANC.
South Africans have been calling for the fight against corruption in state institutions. Do you think Cyril Ramaphosa has what it takes to crack down on graft, particularly when his boss or the outgoing president of the party and president of the country, Jacob Zuma, faces a raft of corruption allegations?
Look, as an individual, the answer would be yes. But we have to wait and see, because in terms of where we are at this moment as we talk, is that the ANC is in the process of electing its National Executive Committee. And so therefore, what we have to watch for is whether or not the ANC National Executive has got the people, pardon me, who can give Ramaphosa that authority to do what he says he's going to do. And so I think that to answer your question, that yes, in terms of what Ramaphosa's electoral campaign issues and messages were, they were about anti-corruption, they were about all these things that are on the major concern of ordinary Africans.
Zwelithu Jalobe is a political science professor at the University of Cape Town. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from Cape Town. Uganda's parliament on Monday resumed debate to amend the constitution. The Legal Affairs Committee presented the report in which it calls for the removal of age limits as well as extending the president's term of office from 5 to 7 years. However, the minority warned that this may bring instability to Uganda. Mugumi Davis Rakaringe reports from Kampala.
Like it was at the beginning, when parliamentarian Rafael Majezi asked for leave seeking to draft the amendment of Article 102 of the Constitution, the parliament began with drama as 6 opposition MPs were suspended by Speaker Rebecca Kadaga of what she said was indiscipline. For about an hour, the remaining opposition parliamentarians stormed out of the House in protest of the Speaker's decision. But the action did not prevent the proceedings of the parliament, dominated by the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, to go on. Jacob Oboth, the chairperson of the Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee, wrote a report in which 20 out of the 28 MPs supported the bill.
The bill proposes to delete paragraph B, which bars persons below the age of 35 years and above the age of 75 from standing as a candidate in the presidential election. The justification advanced for this amendment is to comply with Article 1 of the Constitution, which gives the people of Uganda the absolute right to determine how they should be governed, and Article 21 and 32, which prohibit any form of discrimination on the basis of age and other factors.
Oboth says the extension of the term of office, as suggested by the committee, is to grant the sitting president ample time to execute his manifesto.
Madam Speaker, the committee is scrutinizing the bill, received the memorandum and the presentation.
Order, members.
Holders propose that the term of president be extended from the current 5 years to 7 years. They argue that 7 years is a short time for a president to implement all his or her manifesto. They also argue that other countries in the East African community and Africa generally have extended the term of office of the president to a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 10 years. The committee is agreeable to the proposed amendment.
But parliamentarian Monica Amoding, who read the minority report, described the amendment as dangerous to the country. She says setting the age cap is a requirement to have better leadership, just like it is for education.
We were unable to come across any imbalances arising out or connected to age as a factor for it to amount a discrimination in the terms of Article 21 for us to require a redress under Article 32 of the Constitution.
Any person seeking to stand for presidency in Uganda must have at least completed secondary school education. Amoding says amending the constitution may lead to political uncertainty and instability.
It is the view of the minority that amending Article 102B of the constitution is likely to throw the country into a chaos and instability as it promotes self-seeking incumbents.
Members are expected today, Tuesday, to debate whether to pass the bill or not. Those opposed the constitutional amendment say it is meant to pave way for President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, to contest again. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 19th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Tensions escalated yesterday in Arusha, Tanzania, as the East African Legislative Assembly failed to elect a speaker in its first sitting. This came after Burundi and Tanzania boycotted the sitting to vote for the speaker, as Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya called on the voting process to continue. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha.
I, Honorable Anjiko Muhia, do swear.
It all started with the swearing in of the 4th East African Legislative Assembly members at the East African Community Headquarters in Arusha. After the Parliament of Kenya, which was last to submit the candidates, last week elected the 9 representatives to the Regional Assembly. All 6 member states of the East African community are represented by 9 members in the Assembly. However, electing the speaker couldn't be successful as Burundi, Rwanda and Tanzania contested for the position. Andrew Mukasambide slammed Tanzania's move to contest.
What is apparent is that the candidature for Tanzania constitutes a legal wrong. Speakership of the East African Legislative Assembly is rotational under the provisions of the treaty, particularly Article 53. This application is null and void. My motion seeks to have it struck out that we can now proceed with the other nominated members to compete for the speakership.
Burundi and Rwanda are the possible candidates to remain in the race for the speakership. The speakership of the parliament is on rotational basis, but confusion comes as Burundi and Rwanda joined the community at the same time. Though voting for the speaker was supposed to be conducted in the secret ballot, Burundi and Tanzania boycotted the sitting, citing the irregularities of the process to elect the speaker. Honorable Mary Mujenyi is a Ugandan member of the assembly.
The business of the house has not started because we have not elected a speaker. And without a speaker, there is no business of the house. So the issue of the quorum does not apply at all.
The Tanzanian candidate for the speakership, Adam Kimbisa, said that the quorum should be made so as to elect the speaker, and that the decision should be taken by consensus.
I urge colleagues and friends, the beautiful way to make it, there are higher echelons. Let us be patient. After all, we've been sworn in. After all, we are in. The issue is, so long as there is some hiccups coming up, I strongly advise to wait for the higher echelons to help us with this issue. is complicated, is sophisticated.
As the sitting is expected to resume today afternoon to vote for the Speaker of the Parliament, Burundi and Rwanda are battling for the position amid a deteriorating relationship between the two countries since 2015 after Burundi accused Rwanda of militarily training Burundi refugees to oust the current government, and in return, Rwanda accused Burundi of hosting the FDLR rebels who are accused by Rwandan government of committing the 1994 genocide. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
Angolan President João Lourenço has given Angolans with money illegally taken from the country until early next year to repatriate the money, or the government will claim the money as belonging to the people. Lourenço will talk over from longtime President José Eduardo dos Santos in September this year, has taken steps to curb corruption in the country. He dismissed the daughter of the former president as chair of the state oil company Sonango. Mario Alpaiva is a veteran Angolan journalist. He says President Lourenço is winning the praises of ordinary Angolans, including civil society and the opposition, for his strong anti-corruption stance.
In fact, this was one of the main points of the last president's speech, which, in a paradox, was made not in a condition of a president of a republic, but in condition of deputy president of the ruling party, MPLA, in a so-called seminar on corruption. So Mr. Lourenço, which closed the seminar, made strong remarks saying that the ones which pick up billions of U.S. dollars of the country to foreign countries, they might give back all this money. And Mr. Lourenço says that in January next year, for these people to give back this money without any sanctions. But there are some problems on this, because there is no law, specific law, about this matter. And Mr. Lourenço, maybe at least the ruling party, must negotiate some kind of agreement inside the parliament to move for this step.
First of all, does the government know, or does Mr. Lourenço know, who is hiding this money abroad? Does the government have an idea who is or who has money abroad?
Yes, the government has some kind of information. After the speech of Mr. Lourenço, the new appointed governor of the central bank said there are about 30 billion U.S. dollars out of the country, at least in several continents like Europe, America, and some African countries.
Does this money belong to the government of Angola or to individual Angolans?
This is an important question. The central bank governor, Mr. Massano, also underlined that this money has been owned not only by singular people, but also by some enterprises, some business, which manage to put illicit terms this money out of Angola.
Mario, this must be kind of surprising to many Angolans, because people were thinking that Mr. Lourenço, who was picked by former President Eduardo dos Santos, that he would be easy on the former administration. But it seems to me Mr. Lourenço is going after officials of the former government. It must be surprising. Or do Angolans like what he's doing?
Yes, it was a surprise, especially in the last president's speech, which was a really strong remarks against corruption. And Mr. Lourenço, which closed the seminar, just said a couple of different things, saying there was no stop on the fight against corruption. So all parties and most of the people from civil society are backing Mr. Lourenço. Some of the opinions are saying that there is no need to give a complete amnesty for these people, and these people must bring to the courts. But in general, most of the public opinion are supporting Mr. Lourenço.
I'm reading an article, Mario, where the Minister for Economic Development, Manuel Nunes Jr., is predicting that Angola's economy will grow by 4.9% next year. Any reason to doubt him?
No, I don't think so. This prediction is too much optimism. And I think it was more a political statement. Because if you go to the World Bank and the IMF and the rating agencies, Angola in these kind of situations will be growing no more than 2 points.
Mario Alpavai is a veteran Angolan journalist. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. Authorities in South Sudan's capital, Juba, say they are beefing up security across the capital ahead of the Christmas and New Year celebrations to protect residents. South Sudan's interior minister issued a stern warning to would-be criminals as well as those driving unauthorized vehicles during the holidays. Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
Interior Minister Michael Chienjek and South Sudan National Police Service Inspector Lieutenant General Said Shaul told reporters in Juba they will keep the capital safe during the holidays. Chienjek says they created a circular instructing security forces to be on full alert beginning today, which will continue through January 30th.
This one will help us secure the city. We also want to reiterate that all the tinted vehicles that are roaming around, the numberless also cars, and also temporary plate number is no longer allowed to appear on our streets.
Chen Jack says soldiers and civilians must refrain from shooting guns in the air as a way to celebrate the holidays.
We have a culture of firing the bullets all the time when there are celebrations, Christmas and New Year. This one is not allowed this year, and if anyone found, the security immediately will take a very humiliating measures. You will be beaten, you will be arrested.
Chen Jiek also says security forces will take swift measures against nighttime criminals caught trying to rob citizens.
Those who are still shooting people at night or robbing people at night, this time we are going to deal with them properly. So there are certain measures that we have taken and that need not to be disclosed. You will see them. We have done them last year. We are going also to do the same this year.
Speaking in Arabic, Police Inspector General Said Shaul says police will be working very closely with other security agencies to ensure that every corner of the capital is secure.
Police and security forces will be everywhere, and we have a plan to secure all the remote areas and isolated alleys.
Chienjek is urging citizens to promptly report any security incident to the nearest police unit so that measures can be taken against the violators. The minister says he has sent out similar instructions to all the states across South Sudan. Citizens are being encouraged to call the emergency number 777 to report any criminal activity in progress. Chienjek promises that security forces will respond swiftly. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party has elected a new leader, Cyril Ramaphosa, who will likely be the party's presidential candidate in the next national election. But will Ramaphosa, who was not the outgoing president's pick, be able to overcome the massive challenges ahead for the party? Some analysts say Ramaphosa was elected as president of the African National Congress Party because he has a broad national appeal and is well liked by the country's business community. And that's it for this Tuesday, December 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Reiki Stryak, as well as Samson O'Malley, our sports editor, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a nice day.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.